We're grateful for the presence of everyone that's here and the visitors that are with us tonight. We're certainly grateful for your presence. And certainly by your being here, we're witnessing your consideration and your attitude toward what the Bible has to say. And perhaps there's something that we might be able to say or do that would influence you to do the thing that's necessary to put you into the church. We're so concerned today about the others outside the church and those that are in the world, and it's very important that we train our thoughts and our minds on those that we know, that we love, that we have contact with, that are not in the church, that don't recognize Jesus as their Savior. We're grateful for everyone that is here. We thank you for being here. Thank you for not going away because someone else was speaking and not Brother Warnick. Those of us that have the opportunity to speak here from time to time appreciate the attendance and your consideration, and appreciate what words you might have of encouragement. It's not to say that I'm bound to become a preacher out here someday, but it helps make me feel better about what I do when I am in this pulpit. It does take some effort, it does take some time, it does take some consideration, especially in light of the other things that go around are around about us. I appreciate any person that preaches from week to week and holds down a full-time job. Your mind is filled with so many other things, and it's deeply difficult to concentrate on what you're speaking on when you have other things going on, especially work life. And there are many men across this country that do that from week to week, and I appreciate them quite a bit. On the board, you see before you a passage of Scripture, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 12, and under that I have, in quotes, "know them." We're going to examine tonight perhaps a different perspective of the eldership than you may have heard in recent weeks, months, or years. We so many times hear lessons from this pulpit and other places, and so many articles are written regarding what the eldership is, how to become an elder, what are the duties and responsibilities of the elder. I had this lesson partially prepared about 4 weeks ago, and I was called out of town, and Randy graciously came in and stood up and spoke one of his fine sermons in my place, and I appreciate him for it. But what I wanted to say that for is it not to say that this is in conjunction with anything that the elders had planned for today or for the future. This was something on my mind many weeks ago. We have a responsibility to the eldership of this place and wherever you might be worshiping if you're not a member here. The elders certainly have a responsibility, and we hear it proclaimed many, many times from this pulpit. But how many times do we know what our responsibility is to the elders? And do we recognize our responsibility? And then do we discharge our responsibility to them or toward them? And so we want to examine what was said in the Thessalonian letter, because there was a true concern for love for that church on the part of Paul. Paul loved that church deeply, and he had some kind things to say about them. He had some things that would build them up and to help them grow ever stronger in this time of turmoil in that part of the world in the first century. It's not any different for us today living in this world that we now are a part of. This world that takes our time and our energies and our efforts away from, as Randy pointed out this morning, thinking about what we should be doing as Christians. We're centering our energies so much on things outside the realm of Christianity. Paul certainly wanted to write this in love to that church. And what I'm going to say tonight is, in a matter of speaking, the same as Paul. I'm saying this out of love, and it's introspective of what I'm having to say as well as what you're hearing. It's introspective of me. And I think that's a thing that we need to note every time we hear things from this pulpit. People that speak them are saying them to themselves as well as to everyone sitting out there. Let's examine then, if you would, in the Thessalonian letter. I would like to go back to the verse 11 and read that verse. Wherefore, comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as also you do. Paul was saying, you do this. I have knowledge of your, as he says here, you're comforting one another. I have knowledge of the edification that you have that is built among you, the edifying of one another that is in that place. Then he gives them an exhortation starting with verse 12. We beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. And be at peace among yourselves. Now we exhort you, brethren, warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient toward all men. I want to stop there and use the rest of the time to examine these verses, if we could. Verse 11, Paul certainly is saying there a word of encouragement to them. He's telling them that he finds in them the right kind of attitude about edification. He's telling them that they are building one another up in the faith, as it were, in that place. These brethren had helped him to escape and had protected him in time where that part of his journey in that part of the world was something that was of a nightmare. Paul ran from city to city, from Philadelphia to Thessalonica to Berea and that part of the world in fear for his very life. And the church at Thessalonica was in great support of Paul and what he did in that time, in that particular journey. He encouraged them to continue in the practice that they were already embarked upon. This church didn't need him to tell them what they needed to do about edification and building one another up. They were already doing it. But he does say this in the exhortation. He beseeched them, and that is a strong indication that he wanted them to examine what he was about to say. To know them that labor among you. What does it mean to know them anyway? Does that mean that I know the name of the eldership here in this place? And that I can pick the man out that is the elder and his name that goes with his face and in his character? Is that all that it means to know that person or to know them? To some of us in this room, that might be all that we know about the elders in this place or wherever we might worship. All we're ever concerned with was who is those men that are in positions of elders. We see their names when they hear them from the pulpit from time to time say something of encouragement. And we might hear them say some things that are not necessarily pleasant at times because they're exercising a part of discipline. And we know who those people are. But do we know them, as Paul's talking about here? Do we have regard for those people, those men? Do we pay attention to what they have to say and their words of encouragement? Do we heed what they say? The word heed is not used in our language very often. But in the first century, in early English language, the word heed is a very strong word that is used. And we need to examine that. Do we heed what the eldership says in this place, and their direction, their guidance, their oversight? Do I know them? Do you know the character of these men and what makes up their very being? why they in fact are willing to take on such a responsibility. A responsibility that leads them from the joys of seeing one being restored to the church and the addition of a new member in this place to the pits where someone has in fact had some very unkind words to their face. Do we know them? Do we encourage them and support them in those times of trial and tribulation and also share in their joys? There is integrity and there is true character in any man that accepts the responsibility of being an elder. Integrity is a difficult word to really put your handle on. We use it, but do we know what integrity is and how to measure integrity in men? If we don't know these men, then we can't really measure integrity at times. We need to know them. How free are we to call upon them and feel as though that we can call upon them and use them to our advantage as we try to live this life? If you know them, truly know them, and have esteemed their character and know their very being, what they're all about, then we should feel free to call upon them and seek their guidance and support. How free do we talk to our elders in this place? And I'm speaking to myself as well as to everyone in here. You know, Paul was such a powerful individual. We use his name and we look to the writings that Paul wrote so much. And every time we stand in this pulpit, every Bible class. But Paul used the work and the labor among congregations and the elders of those congregations throughout his writings. Examples would be in Acts, 20th chapter, 1 Peter, 15th chapter. He used that example of the working together with eldership in the first century for a purpose. The inspiration of the scripture leads us to believe that Paul didn't write that just to be saved. There's a purpose behind the need to say that Paul assayed himself to work with a group, that they had an eldership, and that that eldership was working among a group of people. Paul got to know those men, or he would not have encouraged and exhorted those that he wrote to know and understand those people. Hebrews, the 13th chapter, there are some things in that chapter that are addressing the eldership. And verse 7 will begin. Hebrews 13, verse 7, remember those who led you, who spoke to the word of the Lord to you, and considering the results of their conduct, imitate their faith. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version here. But he says that we should remember and we should imitate the elders here. Their qualifications are essential in that we could not imitate if their qualifications weren't met and their qualifications weren't explicitly laid out in the New Testament for us. They would not be worthy of our imitation or our following if they did not meet qualifications that are laid down in the New Testament. The writer of Hebrews is suggesting that we should remember those individuals and that we should imitate their nature, their character, and get to know them. Also in the same chapter of Hebrews, verse 17, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. These men have charge over and responsibility for the souls of each person that meets in this place. Is that a casual occurrence? We sometimes say, well, I'm responsible for so many people in my place of employment, and I'm responsible for so many millions or thousands of dollars in my job. But Randy's lesson this morning pointed out to us that the things of this life, the material things of this life, don't matter in regard to the spiritualness of a Christian. The spirituality of a Christian must be omnipresent, must be there in front of us, must be present at all times. We should, in fact, be able to submit ourselves to these men and for the fact that they keep watch over our souls. They have an account, as this passage says. Those that who will give an account for. You and I will give an account for our own soul in the day of judgment. But what does this passage say about those men that are in positions of elders? It charges them with the accountability of others. Others other than themselves. 100, 200, or whatever the number might be. Do we know them well enough to feel that they have, in fact, a good knowledge of where my soul stands right now? The knowing of one another and how well we know them and how well they know us is very important to this fact. Our attitude toward them should be of a nature that we would allow them to get to know us, and they, them and us. It's important that we continue this thought process. Verse 24 in chapter 13. There is an element here that of importance in verse 24 that we need to look at too. Greet all of your leaders with, and all the saints, that those are from Italy greet you. Now the passage here is stating that we should salute them. And in a salute, or in a acknowledgement of giving them the recognition, those that rule, those that are leaders, those that are in a position of authority and have accountability, as he said up in verse 17, a little earlier in the chapter. How much more important is it for us to think about our spiritual than is to think about our materialness? Isn't spirituality what we are all here for? If we're not here for that purpose, then why are we here? The spiritual well-being of each one of us is the key to how we work with the eldership in this place or any other place that we might go to work. Our spiritual mindedness should ever direct us toward that ultimate goal. Back to our passage in 1 Thessalonians that we started with. He also says there that we should, as he says, esteem them very highly in their love for their work's sake. The high regard for these men, because of their work and the nature of their work, is of not a casual thought or process. We cannot casually deal with the fact that we work under an eldership in this place or anywhere else that we might go. It's not a casual thing that we deal with when an eldership asks for our input, asks for our ideas and thoughts, asks for help in any way. Our attitude should be one of, what can I do to help? Not what can I do to create a problem. And to know them, we get to know them to the extent that we can understand why they're coming from where they're coming. Why are some of the things that are said from this pulpit needed? Is it because it's just something to be said and has to be said? Or is there a real need for it? Is there a purpose and premise behind why the eldership encourages us from time to time? I think there is no question in my mind that there's a need, or they wouldn't be saying the things that they say. There wouldn't be the reason for them to encourage us. There should be no casualness in the approach toward knowing the eldership. And the same is true of them. The whole idea of love for one another is summed up in this, that love really is, in essence, the caring for one another. We have true concern for where our ultimate destiny will be, our spiritual soul. Where will it wind up? Love will direct us if we would only allow it. But you know, sometimes in our own eagerness to, as we say, try to control our own destiny, we really foul things up. It's so easy if we would only allow it to be. It's not difficult to work and to labor among and with one another in a place. But sometimes an eldership has to work and to pull and to string people along and follow after people, and they're doing it out of love. But those men cannot do anything that's going to get me into heaven of themselves. They can't work their way to heaven for me. Nor can anybody else in this room work their way for you to heaven. We're all working toward working for our own salvation. How much more easier it would be if we would help one another through this effort. James 5 is an interesting passage. As I began to study this, it seems James 5 verse 14 what does it say there? It says, call upon the elders. There was a call made. Sometimes we as individual people find it as a good escape to say, there's a real problem over there because nobody called me to see where I was or check on me. But what does the passage in James say that was needed there? There needed to be something done on your part, the part of the person that was sick in this instance. There needed to be a call made. There needs to be something on our part. There's an initiative on our part in this that needs to be looked at. Those men can't lead us and direct us around like a herd of sheep or goats or whatever. Nor can it be done in any other church. We could have 15 elders here, which would be, ratio-wise, would be unbelievable. But those 15 or whatever number you got, if we don't call for, if we don't extend to, if we don't, in fact, have an open attitude about it, then they can't do anything in and of ourselves. We can't, in fact, do anything by just sitting and requesting that somebody do something for me unless I first make a step at time. I've got to make some effort as an individual Christian. Not only when there is sickness involved, but whatever the need might be. I think there's a suggestion, a strong suggestion that is made here that we need to initiate from time to time rather than the elders initiate. The obligation is ours. The ball, as it were, is in our court. And they can't be blamed for every time that someone falls away from the church and because someone's not called and someone's not taken care of. It's everyone's responsibility. It's my fault that someone wasn't called and looked after and picked up when they needed to be picked up. It's my fault when people fall away from the church because I didn't take upon myself to make the necessary phone call to encourage or to help in whatever way. And we sometimes fall into the situation where we blame people, individual men. Some will say, "Who cares about me? Who cares about me?" Well, there's a strong evidence that there was caring here in these passages, especially the one I'm talking about in James. But the fact that I care doesn't mean that I have to be able to drag you or anyone else or have to be the one to initiate. I care, but my evidence of caring doesn't have to be the fact that I'm the one to initiate the call or that I have to be the one to, in fact, do all that's necessary to strengthen and fortify the church. It comes back to each one of us. The passage puts the weight on you and it puts the weight on me as individual members working in this place or any other place. And some of us travel around the country because of work, job commitments, relocations, and the gospel doesn't change from Dayton, Ohio to Columbus to Cincinnati to wherever. The gospel is the same wherever we go. And the implication is the same. If you go somewhere and assail yourself to that church, it's incumbent upon you, and so incumbent upon me as I move, to do as these passages suggest. Get to know the men. Get to know what I need to do in a local work. These men are subject to mistake just like we are. We're all infallible. We all can't say, "Well, they made a mistake. That's shamey, shamey." I guess that's one of the things that is really bugs me a lot. Because my line of work, everyone's pointing the finger at the banker because the banker, if he makes a mistake, then boy, no, bankers don't make mistakes. And I got people that come every day saying that you made an error. You're the reason that this has happened. I'm having problems because you did it to me. And the case, more likely than not, is just the opposite. It's just the opposite. These men are subject to making mistakes too. The Bible deals with how we're to love and understand and help one another in our mistakes that we make. And what is our attitude toward those mistakes? We're told in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, verse 1, that we're not to rebuke an elder. And that passage doesn't necessarily imply the position of an eldership, but it does imply those in there might be elderly, those individuals that might be in a position of age. And it says there that we should appeal to that person really as a father. And he should appeal to us as children. How many of us have gone to our father and shook our finger in their face and said, "You are the cause of where I'm at today"? Has anybody ever done that? Sometimes we as Christians do that to an eldership. We point our little finger at them and say, "You're the reason that I'm where I am, or why we're doing this, or why we're not doing that." But this passage says that we're not to rebuke one another in that fashion, especially those in a position of elder. 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, verse 19 also says, receive not an accusation against these people, these men, except that be on the basis of two or more witnesses being involved. We need to understand our responsibility in these areas as we deal with an eldership, as we work together. Verse 13 in our text in 1 Thessalonians. Verse 13 says, in essence, be at peace with one another. Ephesians, the 4th chapter, verse 3, says that we should be trying to strive for the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. And Paul's encouraging here that peace reign over above all. That peace and love be the hallmark as we work and labor together in a local work. This would be lightening the task for all of us. The stress and the strain, the anxiety that Randy talked about, it prevails in the work of the Lord. The concern we have for others, family members, loved ones, those that don't respond to the gospel, those that turn their back on the gospel, the anxiety, how we feel about that. We should have peace and love in our heart during this time when we try to get through these periods of stress, helping the elders, helping ourselves, as it were, work through the problems. Verse 14, Paul is urging the congregation here. He is admonishing them. He's encouraging them to help the weak. Read that. Now we exhort you, brethren, warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient toward all men. He wasn't just speaking about the eldership here. He was speaking about that congregation in that place and the eldership. This last passage in verse 13 is directed toward all. Verse 14, I'm sorry. It's directed toward all, brethren. All that are in that place. Those that need this exhortation. We should support one another in our effort. We should know them. We should encourage them. We should be an inspiration to one another, not a discouragement, not a hindrance toward the work in this place or any other place. We do not profit anything. We do not profit anything by being a hindrance to any work, wherever we might be. We will be the losers. We will receive the ultimate condemnation for attitude in whether we know them or whether we don't know them, whether we reject them or whether we support them. That's not to say that we'll always agree. But the supporting of one another and the building up of one another in the faith will help us to understand our responsibilities in the area of the eldership. The eldership is a most difficult thing to study and to understand totally how the eldership is to be supported, because everyone has their own idea about what the eldership should be doing and not be doing. But if we'd always keep one thing in mind, as Paul talked about here, that it is an effort to be peaceful and to be loving toward each and every one of us, so that our ultimate goal may be attained. and not our own selfish, our own whims, our own wants. We need to submit ourselves and work together that we would all know these men that are in position here or in the future and wherever we might be. What I have said tonight really hasn't been designed to say anything about what's needed to become a Christian. It hasn't been designed to be a long and in-depth study. It's been very superficial, I would say. But my main purpose was to say that we need to know one another more, much better than what we do. And I fail in that as much as anybody because of whatever is going on in my life. But if we would only think about what we have to gain and what we have to lose, if we do and if we don't. There might be someone here that's not named Jesus as their Savior. There are some here that are young that need to respond. Many that are that need to respond. And the way of responding, in my mind, is really something that is so small, because so many of you have heard the gospel so many times and in so many wonderful ways. You know what you need to do to be saved. You know what it takes to become a Christian. You know how to live the Christian life better than many people out there in the world that profess to be Christian. Because you hear it regularly from this pulpit, you read it, you study it, and you understand it because many of you I've taught. And I know your knowledge of the Bible. And that, in a nutshell, is why I cannot understand why young people don't respond when you know the gospel so well. But there are here that are those that are older in age that don't respond. And time is slipping away for all of us, but especially those of us that have reached an age where we may be graying and balding and not able to keep up with the young people as we once did. And when we realize what age is doing to our body, just think about how close our death is, how close we are to eternity. Age brings about a real awareness of how close we are to going into eternity, those of us that might be older. We need to have people in this place respond to the gospel. We need that because it builds us up. It strengthens us. It encourages me to see someone obey the gospel. It makes me want to do more to talk to people about the gospel when I see someone being in response to the gospel. We need that so much in this place. And we need to be about encouraging one another. Your response tonight will be your own. It won't be mine. It won't be the eldership's. It'll be yours. Your denial or acceptance will be yours. We'll hope and pray that you'll respond, maybe not this hour, but whatever hours are given to you in the future, because we know not how many more hours we've got to live upon this earth. And we'll pray for those that don't respond tonight, that maybe you'll see the need tomorrow or whatever future time that you have. We're praying that you will accept Jesus as your Savior. And we are praying especially for those that need to respond and know that they should respond tonight. We ask that you be standing, and we will ask that